Hour number two, welcome back. 104.5 The Zone, Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Lucas Panzeca making everything happen behind the scenes. Austin Burlidge, Power T Tape. He'll break down the X's and O's of Tennessee's loss to Ole Miss on Saturday and look ahead to Alabama this weekend. With us in the next segment, we're taking your calls as well, 615-737-1045. Stick with the Vols for a little bit longer. They're the biggest story today, and then we'll get to some Titan stuff with Monday Night Football taking place in Nashville. Very exciting. By the way, if you're going to the game tonight, make sure to have the latest version of the Titans app downloaded on your phone. They've got a new update that's been released. It is required for entry for tonight's game. Update your app today through the Apple Store and Google Play Store. Very good. So, in losing to Ole Miss, let's take a look. It's funny because the replay is happening right now on SEC Network. The Vols currently down 24-9 right before halftime. This is what I'm watching, which is spectacular timing because you can see they're showing all of the pregame tailgating, and now they're showing the stadium shot. It's such an incredible place. I want to go to Neyland Stadium so badly. I'm happy that I wasn't there on Saturday for all the stuff that sounded like it happened. I know Will Compton and all them went down. They took the bus down to Knoxville, and they were on the sidelines, so we'll talk to Will on Wednesday, I'm sure, about what he got hit in the head with at the Tennessee-Ole Miss game. This would have been a win for Tennessee if it had happened. That would have been talked about as like Derrick Henry's Thursday night football, 4-touchdown, 230-yard plus performance, where there's maybe 40,000, 45,000 people in the stands at Nissan Stadium, but everybody says that they were there. If Tennessee would have won that game, it would have been 102 plus thousand in the stadium, but there'd have been a million people that said, I was there that night when Tennessee built or beat Ole Miss. Instead, they squander their late game rally ability. They don't get Hendon Hooker hurt, but Hendon Hooker comes out of that game hurt. Joe Milton has to finish, and now everything is greatly surrounded by uncertainty because your next three opponents, and listen, I know Kentucky, man, Kentucky so badly wanted to cover that spread. Mark Stoops just saying, you know what, bettors, I got you. If you bet 21.5, if you bet Georgia minus 21.5, like a lot of people did, and they would have had it up until the last minutes of that Kentucky-Georgia game, Mark Stoops says, nah, bleep you. We're going for it, and they got it. But for the next three opponents, even as Kentucky is not Alabama or Georgia, they're still going to give you a hell of a fight. It's not going to look the way that Georgia's defense looked against Kentucky, where I'm looking at the Georgia defense and saying, just draft all of them. Draft every one of them. They're playing a different sport. So now you're not sure how this season is going to go. You felt hugely confident. You honestly still should, because I was so impressed, and that sounds ridiculous when the quarterback you're facing has over 400 yards of offense, but I was legitimately impressed with Tennessee's defense. Even as the offense was held to the lowest first-half scoring total of the season, Ole Miss decided they were going to play defense against Tennessee and nobody else this year. Probably drives Vols fans insane. But we'll get into more of what Tennessee was doing to try and limit Matt Corral and to force turnovers the way that literally nobody else has done to this point through 7 weeks of college football. One interception for Matt Corral on the season, and Tennessee owns it. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Mike, who's in Nashville, who wants to weigh in on that game on Saturday. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, buddy.
My very first game at Neyland Stadium, I'm 60 years old. 420 yards of offense from one guy is ridiculous. But there's hope in Knoxville, and there's hope with the UT program. But with every game, there's a thug element that shows up to a game. So you take 102,000 people, you're going to have 10,000 thugs there. You're going to have to do something to make sure that those thugs do not make an impact like they did Saturday night. It was crazy.
Hey,
it was absolutely crazy.
I appreciate the call, Mike. I mean, I don't know what you do, right? Like, they tried. They evacuated the lower bowl, basically. And then everybody came back in. It was still throwing stuff when the game resumed play with 54 seconds on the clock. And Tennessee had a shot, man. Tennessee had an opportunity to win that game with less than, what was it, 37 seconds. That was wild. That was insane. They found ways to get just a little bit closer, and ultimately, they couldn't get the job done. They couldn't finish it. But I mean, the line was minus one with probably about an hour before kickoff. Ole Miss was a favorite coming into Knoxville. It ended up being basically a pick 'em at that point, with Ole Miss being favored by minus one. But what I'll say to you ultimately is the defense found ways to bother Matt Corral. Now, you're going to be driven crazy by, one, the way that Ole Miss plays football, because fourth down means nothing to them. They're going. They don't even have to be on your side of the 50-yard line. Their first drive, it looked like it was going to stall out on fourth and six, and you have a quarterback that can pick up fourth and six with his legs. Matt Corral was a cheat code. He's been one all season long. He's done it consistently. He has looked by far and away, I mean, he's the best quarterback in this draft class coming up. We talked to Coach Mack, Coach Dave McGinnis, about that on Friday before the weekend. He was finding ways to elude pressure, and then he was just straight up bowling over dudes. I haven't seen a quarterback run with his shoulder down like that in a long, long time. Hell, he broke Manziel's rushing record. It's such an interesting game from both sides, looking at both teams, because, I mean, what is the trajectory of Ole Miss? They've got two losses on their season, so it's not like they're a college football playoff contender, but do they have to be to still be a team that can cause others in the SEC issues this year? There's no question. Now, if they got manhandled by Alabama, but plenty of people are going to get manhandled by Alabama this season. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Ricky in West End who wants to chime in. What's up, Ricky?
Hey, Buck. Hey, so I'm not a UT fan, so this is coming from the perspective of just a casual person watching the game. And when you're sitting there, and I think more in your boat, where I'm just getting frustrated because we're 30 minutes into this and I'm still having to watch the game not being played.
Yeah.
And Tennessee had three timeouts. So the game wasn't even officially over at that point. You have the timeouts. You can get the ball back, which shows how much UT fans don't believe in that defense that, all in all, played pretty well, especially in the second half. But the ultimate irony of this game is that you have it delayed to 30 minutes. You have your best player, your quarterback, sitting on the sideline getting cold, not doing anything, just waiting for this delay to end. He's probably on the same boat kind of thinking, we're not going to get this ball back. Lane Kiffin's going to get a first down. And then you get the ball back. He comes back and he gets hurt. And you can't directly correlate that to the delay, but it certainly didn't help for him to sit there for 30 minutes and just be standing around waiting for the game to get going again. It basically was a third halftime for him, or second halftime.
No, so I completely agree, Ricky. I mean, so did the coaching staffs. They were having those guys warm up again as the game was getting ready to resume. They felt it necessary. I appreciate the call. It's whether you can, as Ricky said, whether you can directly correlate it, you're not going to be able to do that, but it doesn't help. It further enhances the fervor that the crowd is going to stir themselves up into, because they're bored. They're waiting for the game to start back, even though there's a contingent of them that are responsible for the game being brought to a screeching halt. Then you got to go out there after what took more time than halftime, and continue to play the final minute of that game. It was a really, really difficult position to put Hendon Hooker and that offense in. And I thought, listen, I know they didn't win, and you don't do moral victories, but in a 5-point loss, I felt as good about Tennessee as I have all season. And that's not homerism, because you know I have no allegiance to the Vols that way. We'll talk about what Ole Miss was doing to try and exploit that Tennessee defense, and whether there was anything that Tennessee's defense could have done better to stop Matt Corral, with Austin Burlage of Power T Tape. We'll continue to take your reaction as well and get you ready for this Monday night football game between the Titans and the Bills. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Power T Tape. It's what we do every Monday after a Vols game. We do it with our buddy Austin Burlage at Austin_Burlage is where you can follow him. My guy, were you in attendance? How did you consume the game? What did you make of everything that happened around it before we get into what happened actually on the field? What made it very, very enjoyable outside of all the, you know, the circus?
Right, yeah. So I was at home. It was nice. Got to watch it all from all 5 hours of it or whatever it was ended up being. So I was glad I was at home for that one. But yeah, I consumed it from home. It was good. And then, you know, when I prepare to come on with you guys and everything else that I do, I usually write out like a list of, you know, topics. What would people want to talk about? And usually it's pretty easy, but this one there was like 12 things on my list of like where we could really go. Obviously, it's a real shame that the conversation around this game has been overshadowed by what happened at the very end. I'm sure you guys have been talking about it all morning. It just sucks.
So let's not talk about the sucky part, because you're right. I have talked about the sucky part all morning long, and I don't want to talk about the sucky part anymore. So if we're looking over and done with, next. So let's look at this from a X and O's perspective. What is at the top of Austin Burlage's list that you have come prepared to talk about today? Because I kind of wanted to, from my standpoint, the most interesting thing to me was the performance of the defense against Matt Corral. But where do you look at this and say, okay, this is what stood out to me the most?
Yeah, I think that would probably be the biggest one. So I had two. I mean, obviously the running of Corral, and I thought it was interesting from a just from like a game management standpoint of Ole Miss being the team that goes for it on fourth down the most in the country. And they went three times, converted twice, and then that was all in the first half. And I thought Tennessee, it was kind of interesting to me, like Tennessee only went for it on fourth down one time, and that was the fourth and 24 where we got about 23 and three quarters, and that's what sparked the whole outrage or set it all off at the very end. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting too, you know, just how each coach managed fourth down situations. Tennessee punted three times from plus territory. Some of that was, you know, a little bit the situation, down and distance situation. Another punt on fourth and one after the officials blew the play dead to review the spot, and Cade Mays got injured on a play that didn't technically count. So I thought that was interesting, the fourth downs, but also, yeah, Matt Corral.
Yeah, my God. I mean, he's the most exciting player in the sport right now. But let's go back to Heupel punting in plus territory, because what made that game so enjoyable for me is the way that, and we've known this about Ole Miss all year long, nobody goes for it more on fourth down than Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And it seems that this has been adopted by a handful of coaches. Not many seem this bold about it, this brazen about it. I can think of Brandon Staley in the NFL with the Chargers and Lane Kiffin in college football at Ole Miss. I'm sure there's other more lower profile examples that I'm not citing, but you get the point. So with Heupel and what they're doing, how much are they losing it, with this offense in particular, by not going for it more on fourth?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like it's a lot, and I'm a little bit confused on some of the situations. Like we talked about that fourth and one earlier. I mean, Velus Jones caught a slant and came up about a half yard short, and they were going tempo, 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 get up to the line, and they ran a play, and right as they were running the play, the officials blow the play dead to review the spot. And then after the spot comes back and is confirmed, they walk the punt unit back on the field. So I was kind of confused about that, of like, well, why were you, you know, and I get it. I understand the tempo part of the offense, but I just wonder, you know, why are you willing to go for it on fourth and one in that situation if you can run at tempo, but you're not willing to do it after you get, you know, a free timeout to come up with like your best short yardage play. I didn't really get that, give it back to Ole Miss. And, you know, on the one hand, you don't want to chase the game. You don't want to give Ole Miss chances or more chances than they're going to. But Tennessee was within striking distance that whole game. Actually, into the second quarter, had almost like a 70% win probability for the analytics nerds out there. So, like, definitely chances where they could have capitalized. And I felt like, you know, when you – I have them charted out here, but like fourth and nine from the plus 49 down seven. And where was another good one? fourth and 10 at the right. plus 32 down five. I mean, you know, and then that was when we kicked the field goal, which we then ended up missing. So I just feel like with the offense that we run and the tempo that we run and the amount of pace that we run at, you're never really out of the game, which the broadcast crew touched on as well. Like both coaches mentioned that, you know, I felt like there were chances where Heupel could have been more aggressive there and chose not to be.
Austin Berlage of Power T Tape here with us on 104.5 The Zone, talking Vols and Ole Miss based off of that result on Saturday. So Tyon Evans obviously did not go. Jabari Small and Hendon Hooker did a lot of damage on the ground. Jabari Small, but not nearly as efficient as somebody like Tyon Evans would have been. What did they lose without Tyon Evans and Cade Mays for the majority of that game from their rushing attack?
Yeah, Cade was the injury that I'm particularly most interested in, I guess, in hearing about his status. Obviously, it sucks that it occurred on a play that never technically happened, and then he was out for the rest of the game, and then Dane Davis went in there, and, you know, no offense to him, but he's not Cade Mays, and when he went in, Ole Miss was able to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback in the pass game, especially on twists and stuff from his side, and that doesn't really bode well for our future. So I'm interested to see how bad that one is and if he can come back. I think obviously people are wondering about Hendon Hooker's status, which hopefully we get an announcement on soon, because I think Heupel has a press conference shortly, maybe even during our call. So hopefully we get an update there, but I think everybody sort of knows what Tennessee has now behind Hooker at the quarterback position, but it's not going to matter. Whoever's back there, it's not going to matter if we can't protect him. So I thought we were missing a lot there, although I will say that Tennessee did run the ball really well. They were actually more successful. They had better yards per play and better EPA EPA per play statistically than Ole Miss did. So they actually ran the offense pretty efficiently. I think it was more situational of things we could have done play calling wise and like we talked about on the fourth down. But yeah, I mean, with the running backs too, obviously Evans is a huge loss. I think Small really fills, he does a good job there, but after them, it's just not as dynamic, not as great of vision, not as great as top end speed. But you can't play Small the whole game when you're running, you know, 90 plays plus per game. So huge losses there all over, and a team that is thin to begin with, and we may end up being more thin here with about half the season remaining.
Lucas says we have an injury update. The head coach is speaking now. Lucas, what do we have?
Josh Heupel literally moments ago just said Hendon Hooker, Tyon Evans, and Cade Mays are probably day-to-day at this point. He said he doesn't believe Hooker's injury is long-term.
Well, that's good news for Vols fans, because Joe Milton, God love him, he did have a fantastic attempt in the back of the end zone with the opportunity to win it. For all of his ills, he would have been a legend at Tennessee if that's the way that they would have beaten Ole Miss. But that, the running out of bounds with no time left on the clock, God love him. It's so emblematic of what the Joe Milton experience has been wholesale.
Yeah, I mean, like it's been killing me. Like what? You know, it just speaks to the situation of, like, do literally anything else there, and it's better than what he did, right? Yeah. Like, if you try to run a guy over, if you try to stay in bounds, if you try to lateral it, at least it shows, you know, you're aware of the situation. Just running out of bounds is the one for me where I'm like, man, like, I can understand, you know, like, even if he would have, like, gone past the line of scrimmage and then thrown it to the end zone, like an illegal forward pass, even then I would have at least been like, well, you know, he's trying to make a play and he lost where he was on the field, but, you know, going out of bounds when the play started with 3 seconds, it was brutal. So yeah, huge news. I obviously Hooker's injury did not look great. You know, you never want to speculate on those type of things. So yeah, good to wait. And maybe, I mean, who knows, maybe Heupel is playing a little bit. He hasn't been very clear with injuries in the past, so you never know, but it's cautiously optimistic that that's really good news.
Day to day is about as generic as you can get as a coach, but that's not even something that we don't even get that from Mike Vrabel. So, you know, what are you going to do? All right. They travel to Alabama this weekend. Tennessee does. They currently, as I see them in my DraftKings Sportsbook app, they are 27.5 point dogs at Alabama. Bryce Young was wildly successful. God help Mississippi State. They were always going to get put in a hole from Alabama coming off a loss. but certainly it did not need to look like a 40-point win the way that it did for the Crimson Tide. And also, it was done in 3 hours, so bless them for that, because that was a much more concise experience than Tennessee Ole Miss ended up being. What can they do at Alabama? Because the defense, I mean, it can be had to a degree. No, it's just the offense that's overwhelming again.
Yeah, correct. So I forgot where I saw it, but over the past 3 years, and this isn't taking any type of shot at Alabama's defense because they're still obviously really good, but they have not been the Alabama that you think of when you hear the name Alabama defensively. And like Nick Saban has said things in the offseason about how, you know, you don't really win championships with defense anymore. They are still obviously really good. They have elite players, but they're not maybe what they once have been. I think that tempo offenses and particularly running quarterback play has given them some issues. Obviously, Tennessee fans are familiar with the defense because we ran it with Pruitt to a great extent over the last 3 years. So there are times, you know, they like to play man match or a lot of man coverage on the outside where you end up having defenders running with receivers' eyes not looking at the quarterback. So if you have a dynamic quarterback that can get out and make plays in space, you can have success against them. And you think back even 2 weeks, right, to the Texas A&M game, and their backup quarterback had a huge game against it. So and obviously they got some help on special teams and whatnot, but in a great defensive effort. But, yeah, the defense certainly can be had. Obviously, I think depth is going to play a huge role there. And, again, you know, the day-to-day status is great, but I really worry about the edge with what Alabama has on the defensive edge in Will Anderson. I mean, that guy's a stud. So, yeah, that's a little concerning.
Austin Berlage, among the small concerns heading to Alabama, yeah, coming off a loss
name one, yeah,
against Ole Miss. At Austin double _ Berlage is where you can follow me. Joins us every Monday to go over the Power T tape. Thanks, buddy. Enjoy your week, and Godspeed. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it. Buck, I can't wait to see the suit tonight, man.
It's prime time. I'm going to look good, bud. I'm going to look real good.
I had no doubt. I just am excited to see it.
We'll make sure to get that out on social media for Austin Berlage of Power T Tape. Yeah, the outfit tonight, I'm going to strut on him. I haven't yet gone to the barber. I haven't yet got my beard trimmed. I haven't yet got all the things that I'm going to do to make sure that I'm ready for Monday night, because it's not just game day for the players. Game day for your boy as well. We'll talk about the Titans and the Bills on Monday Night Football later on in the show. Keith Bullock, Mr. Monday Night himself, is going to join us at 12:20. But in the meantime, let's go back to the phones to talk and react about what was just said having to do with Tennessee on the field. Let's go to Uncle Bob, who's in Columbia, who wants to weigh in.
Hey, gentlemen, good morning.
What's happening?
Yeah, I just wanted to not change the subject. We didn't lose the game because of the refs. I think the refs overall everywhere are just terrible, frankly. But I wanted to ask if y'all saw what I observed. Hendon, it was early in the first quarter, and we were closing in pretty good, and Hendon got crowned. I mean, I don't who it was, linebacker or D-back came up and crowned him, and that should have been a penalty. That would put us on the first, on the one-yard line. And then from there, the second one, and I'll hang up, there were the two holding calls in the fourth quarter that, yeah, I thought were pretty questionable. And somebody was telling me something, and if y'all could explain it, I don't gamble or bet on these things, but it was a 5-point swing, and something about, you know, those holding calls, that, and this friend was saying, it's like a refs, and it's not true, but it's like they were determined we weren't going to get that point to, shape, I don't know. So a little crazy, but wonder what you thought, and have a great day. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you, too, Bob. Enjoy your day. 615-737-1045. So this is the statement that Greg Sankey put out after the game, okay? Because this is what pissed Vols fans off. And if you want to get involved, 615-737-1045. The conference has established expectations for behavior and sportsmanship, and the actions of fans at Saturday night's game were unacceptable under any circumstances. We are accustomed to intense competition every week, but under no circumstances is it acceptable to endanger the contest participants and disrupt a game. We will review existing conference policies and the commissioner's authority to impose penalties and communicate with the leadership at the University of Tennessee and all of the SEC's member universities to make certain this situation is not repeated. So that's a pretty strong indictment and pretty stiff finger wagging at Vols fans. Now, again, we addressed the issue with Vols fans and the people who did disrupt that game on Saturday. It is unacceptable, and that position is correct. But if you're going to come down that strongly on the people who attended that game, then so too do you have to hold yourself accountable and your conference accountable for how trash the officiating has been wholesale. We have somebody who calls, who has called the show in past weeks, and I would honestly appreciate his perspective. I think he just goes by Mr. Official when he calls the show to kind of keep us honest about criticisms, because it's a difficult job to do, no question. And in fact, this particular officiating crew, as we discussed, Mark Curls and his crew were on the botched finish of Memphis, Mississippi back on September 18th. In fact, Dawn Davenport was on the call of that game. I'm sure she'll have some unique perspective when 3HL rolls around this afternoon. It cannot be this blatant and obvious, and it cannot happen wholesale. It wasn't just happening to Tennessee. It's happened all year long across the sport. It has gotten appreciably worse. Now, the fact that there's a million different camera angles on these primetime games, and you have the benefit of replay review at your disposal, where there's no way that the officials could get it as consistently right as the cameras do. I'm so sympathetic to that. But just some accountability. And I think Greg Sankey, by far and away, is the best commissioner across college football, across college sports. But this is something that is consistent. Do not protect your officials just because you want to protect the image of the conference, because that's what it looks like to me.
Greg Sankey joined The Nation, a show in Knoxville, yesterday. This is from Ben McKee of VolQuest. He said, in terms of how officials are assigned to games, they have a limited pool of officials, so they're going to rotate through schools. And he said, quote, we do hold them accountable, saying that mistakes factor into what games they get. But you talked about this crew in that Memphis-Mississippi State game. That's not accountability, is giving that crew a primetime game in front of a sellout crowd, right? Literally 3 weeks later. Giving them that responsibility after arguably the most botched call we've seen in college football this season with that punt return.
No, you shuffle them over to ESPN Plus for whoever Vanderbilt is playing. By the way, oh my God, Vandy. Oh my God. We haven't even talked about that. I watched that whole game. It was a self-loathing. I don't know why I did it. It was my day off, and I watched Vandy just blow it to South Carolina. I'm sure that'll come up in winners and losers of the football weekend tomorrow. Let's go to Matt, is in Clarksville. He wants to talk about the SEC commissioner. What's up, Matt?
You know, it's kind of how the media operates when they want to put a narrative out there. This is a prime example, because all you hear is ball fans, ball fans, ball fans. And if you were at that game, and if you watch the game and you know where the student section is, you could see where all that stuff was coming from. It was from the student section. 18 to 22 year olds who have been drinking all day long. And I was sitting in section B, just a few sections over from the student section, and we had to enter gate 23, and gate 24 is a student section. I've never in my life seen so many inebriated kids coming in those gates.
Yeah.
And the difference between when I was at school at UT, you sobered up at the game because you couldn't drink. And then you watch them, and they're coming out of these beer lines with four 25-ounce beers at a time, and they're just getting just absolutely torn up. And then they're shocked at the behavior at the end of a five-hour game, after they've been drinking all day long and drinking the whole game long. And then they don't accept any responsibility for that. The university, the conference, or whoever. It's obviously a money play. They're so greedy. They want to sell $25, 25-ounce beers.
Oh, hell yes. They want in on that money.
And then those kids are just trashed. And then they're acting like a regular college kid who's trashed, and this is what happens. And then all of a sudden you get on social media, and it's all the Vol fans. You know, I had right. my whole family there. I had a four-year-old daughter there. We had the best day ever, probably. It was a great day. That place was rocking. And then we've got to be drugged through the mud because of our student section who gets liquored up and fueled up. And our university bears responsibility for that, pouring all that beer down their throats. I mean, nobody's making them drink, but goodness gracious, they're college kids. And do that when we were in school, it would have been the same way. I'm not judging them because, like I said, we went in the stadium. We were done drinking for the day pretty much.
Hey, go ahead and rack them. That's a great call, Matt, because Vols fans writ large are being drugged through the mud and have been since Saturday night, since after that game ended. And that's not the case at all.
Well, but to say it was regulated only to the student section, I don't think is totally
true. No. That part I think is skewed. And but listen, I have to respect where Matt is coming from because I was so blown away by that. And what I would say is, listen, I'm not claiming to know Vols fans on an intimate level, right? But what I'm saying to you is the people who are dragging you across the internet, like, I don't know how many people read Pete Thamel on Yahoo Sports, but the things being written on Yahoo Sports, it read to me like somebody who's just trying to get the most engagement out of a post. And turns out, you guys are super engaging. You guys are super engaging when people piss you off. And when you see mud and arrows and things being slung at you, you're going to engage with that content. You're going to probably click on it to be outraged for yourself, and you're going to drive traffic that way. It's designed. Listen, I'm somebody who works in the content business, all right? So when he says media, I assume he's not talking about me, but this is how my mind works too. I know after the Tennessee Titans lose a game to the New York Jets that it's going to be absolute pandemonium. I know that the lead on a Monday after that game on Saturday night is going to be the Vols fans because they're who's the most pissed off. It's unfair, and it's being done by people who don't necessarily know Vols fans. They just take what they think is Vols fans directly from Vol Twitter, and turns out that a lot of Vol Twitter happens to be the worst parts of the fan base. It's not representative of the sum of the parts, but it's representative of what the television cameras were showing them. 615-737-1045. We'll continue this conversation coming up next. Your reaction as well. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Hey, if you're a Titan fan, or if you're attending the Bills-Titans game, because I hear that Broadway is flooded with Bills fans, you're going to have to keep your stadium from being taken over tonight. And if you do not yet have the latest version of the Titans app downloaded on your phone, they're saying that a new app update has been released for that app. And if you don't have it yet, you need to get it because it's required for Monday's game. So make sure you do that in the Apple Store and Google Play Store. We're going to spend the whole final hour. Keith Bullock is going to be here. Mr. Monday Night, we'll talk about this game between the Titans and the Bills, but it sounds like Titans fans are going to have their work cut out for them trying to keep Bills fans out of the stadium. There's something like between 30 and 40,000 Bills fans in town, and I'm sure that number is underestimated based on the things that I've been seeing coming out of Nashville's airport. It is going to be insane tonight at Nissan Stadium, and I'm curious to see what percentage of that is actually the home team's fans. 615-737-1045 is the number. We've been talking about Tennessee and Ole Miss, though. The replay currently showing on SEC Network. It's 10 minutes, 53 seconds left in the fourth quarter. I just got a strobe light effect in here, Lucas. I don't know if you can tell what's happening. It's just hopefully I don't have epilepsy. But in the meantime, we'll go to the phones and see what's happening. People probably think I'm in like a disco light show on Zone TV. All right, let's go to Justin, who's in Nashville. He wants to weigh in. What's up, Justin?
Oh, nothing much. I was calling. I'm not really that worried about what the national media thinks about Tennessee, all that. They've called us trailer trash since Peyton Manning didn't win the Heisman, so that doesn't really offend me when they get upset about what happens in Neyland. But I'd like to ask Sankey and all of those guys, what's deadlier, Tennessee fans throwing trash or DJ Durkin leading a practice at Maryland?
Oh, man. Well, there's that. He's on the sidelines he's on the sidelines out there. Who was he coaching for yesterday? Where did I see DJ Durkin?
DJ Durkin's the defensive coordinator at Ole Miss.
That's what I was thinking. Because we had John Reed, of course, bring up the fact that there was some severely negligent – oversight or lack thereof at Maryland with what happened under DJ Durkin there as the head coach, and now he's back in the SEC. And, I mean, we're talking about things like, but this is what I don't want to do today. Whataboutism, you know? Like, there's bad stuff that happens across college football. Some is worse than others. Having DJ Durkin employed on your coaching staff, probably worse than throwing a golf ball, a range ball at that, at Lane Kiffin. But I'm not doing whataboutism today. I'm not freaking out about Tennessee fans being accused of being horrible people because they're throwing stuff on the field and using the video of the Ole Miss Tennessee basketball game. Was that, when was that? Was that recently? You know the clip
that
I'm talking about?
That was
2019. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it was Tennessee won a game because of a late charge call on Admiral Schofield at half court, and Ole Miss fans went nuts after the game ended.
That's what I'm saying. It happens everywhere. Everywhere. Across all kinds of sports. So I'm not interested in doing, well, we did this, but they did that. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Don't do it. Don't do it. And I understand that maybe that's easier said than done, but I don't think so. A little bit of restraint, it's not asking that much. And it's not like I'm talking to the entire fan base. That's what pisses me off. There's a small segment of people that hijacked the whole conversation. And now it turns into this because the entirety of the fan base has to go and defend themselves against people attacking them for the actions of a few. It's a wasted exercise. It benefits nothing. It just keeps this cycle of people being pissed off at one another going, which could speak to larger societal ills that we, you know, we'll save that. We'll save that for the sociology podcast. How about that? 615-737-1045. John is in Murfreesboro. He wants to chime in.
What's up, guys? I am neither a Tennessee nor an Ole Miss fan, and I promise when I say this, I'm not picking on Tennessee. It just so happens that Tennessee fans, the very small portion of them that were throwing trash out on the fields, are the ones that did it the most recent. Lucas knows what happens in Europe when a small portion of a fan base gets rowdy, gets too rowdy. The team has to play behind closed doors their next game. And I promise, again, I'm not picking on Tennessee, but I think that might be the only way to stop this from happening at any school is when a team does this, whether it be Tennessee or North Carolina or Ole Miss or Sister Mary's of the Poor, I don't care. When a team does this, you make them play their next home game behind closed doors.
I appreciate the call. For Lucas, and I'd be, because we've done Lucas a disservice. Normally he's very, normally we lean on him pretty hard, and that's not been a part of the show today, but he of course has the perspective of somebody who was in there. He attended the university. He was back at his old college bar with his friends. He was pissed off that Will Compton took over his college bar, and we'll get his insight on that when you guys leave him alone on the phones. And then of course we'll pivot to some Monday Night Football conversation with Keith Bullock in the final hour of this game. But yeah, I mean, listen, there's, because I'm watching number 24 for Ole Miss. His name escapes me, but it's the moment where he's standing on the sideline. It's either Deanne or I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's Deanne Leonard. He's the cornerback, number 24. Where he's just standing on the sideline before the play is getting ready to take place, and he just collapses in a pile of himself, and the fans lose their minds. Like, there's so many different looks at this stuff that people are going to require some oversight, and what you're getting is rather a commissioner of the conference telling the fan base, "Hey, knock it off, or we're going to do something to you that's going to make you knock it off." When that inevitably that never happens, they're empty words. We'll come back and we will talk about the Titans and the Bills because we haven't spent any time today on this Monday Night Football game. It's going to be a great one, I think, even though the Bills are favored here in Nashville, and even if they bring in the home crowd with them. We'll talk about it coming up next. Don't forget, Keith Bullock, Mr. Monday Night himself, will join us at 12:20. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.